B'siyata d'shmaya, we're going to learn Maseches Shkolim in Yerushalmi, Daf Gimel. We're going to start at the top line, says the Gemara. The Gemara is taking us back to the Mishnah on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, that on the 15th of Adar, then the agents of the Beis Din would take care of the needs of the public. What would they be doing? So the Mishnah gives a list. Mesaknin es hadrochim es harachoyvois, the roads, the public throughways they would repair, ves mikvois hamayim, they would make sure that all the mikvois are in full working order, voisin kol tzorki rabim, and besides for that, they would do all the other needs of the public. The question is, what are these tzorki harabim, which are not included in mesaknin es hadrochim es harachoyvois, ves mikvois hamayim? And that's going to be discussed. Says the Gemara, Eilu hein tzorchei rabim. The following are the tzorchei rabim, the needs of the public, which are not explicitly mentioned in the Mishnah. Donin dine momenois, they start, the Beis Din sit together and take care and resolve any money issues. They tell people that if you've got an issue with your neighbor, with a friend, with anybody in monetary issues, come to the Beis Din. V'dine nefashois, and if there's any issues of having to decide who has to be put to death and when for averus that they've done, dine makis, the same applies to lashes. Upoidin erichin v'charomim v'egdeshes, they redeem the different types of commitments to the Beis Hamikdash called erichin, charomim, and hegdeshes, discussed elsewhere in Shas. Umashkin es asoita, they decide if a woman has to drink the waters and when she's going to drink the waters if she's suspected of being a soita. V'sorifin es haporo, and if necessary, they would burn another pora aduma, preparing more ashes and water to be sprinkled on the people when coming up for aliyah l'regel. Va'irfin eglu arufa, in the event that a corpse was found between two cities, we don't know who murdered him, then the elders of the closest city, they would do a procedure called eglu arufa, they would behead a calf, and on the 15th of Adar, if that was something they had to do, that's when they would do it. V'roitz in Eved Ivri, who after 6 years is supposed to leave his master and become free, if he says, I love my master, I want to stay there, then we pierce his ears, the Beis Din pierce this person's ears, they would do it then as well. U'matarin es ha-matzeira, if there's a matzeira that needs to go through and complete his tahara, then they would do that in preparation, again, that this matzeira should be able to eat from the Korban Pesach. U'mefarkin es ha-min or me'al-gabi ha-mayim, the wells of water, where during the winter they had been locked in order that the wells can fill up with water, and now, just before the people are coming to be Eilu Regel, they would unlock, they would open up, they would remove the locks from on top of these wells, on top of these pits, in order to give access to the public to the water that had collected there. Ve'ein machzirin oison, and they do not return these covers onto the wells until the end of the summer. Tamon taninon, says the Gemara, we learnt in a Mishnah, Mashkin beis hashlochin, one is allowed to, on chol hamoed, this is talking about chol hamoed, one is allowed to water an irrigated field, a field that does not get sufficient rainwater, and one has to manually water it, one's allowed to do that on chol hamoed, under certain circumstances discussed in Maseches Moed Katan. U'matzaynin es hakvoris, and on chol hamoed one is also allowed to mark where the graves are, in order that people who need to stay tohir shouldn't chas v'sholem hover over a grave and become tomei. And the question is, lo yikvar tziyunu mi'ador? Why are you in the Mishnah saying in Moed Katan that on chol hamoed, let's assume it's talking about chol hamoed Pesach, on chol hamoed Pesach you're allowed to matzaynin es hakvorim, to mark the graves? Did it not say in our Mishnah already at the beginning, earlier on in the Mishnah? Actually, not earlier on, the next words in the Mishnah, or Metzainin es hakvoris, that on the 15th of Adar, they would mark where the graves are. V'yetzin ala kilayim, they would go out and inspect that people have indeed removed the kilayim as they should have on the 1st of Adar. So here the Gemara is asking that why does it say in the Mishnah that on chol hamoed Pesach, you're allowed to mark where the graves are? But did you not say that on the 15th of Adar they would already do that? So why is it necessary to mark them again just a couple of weeks later on chol hamoed? Answers the Tiftar, you should answer as follows. Shayor al shetef shel d'gishomim, if a storm of water came down in between the 15th of Adar and chol hamoed, v'shotfoy, and washed away the markings of the graves, and therefore on Chol HaMoed you're allowed to mark them again. Continues the Gemara, V'yotzin al HaKelayim, the agents of Beis Din would inspect that the fields indeed, the owners of the fields have removed the Kelayim, which are the growths, the plant, the plantation that's not allowed to be grown there, because of Hilchas Kelayim, either in a regular field or in a vineyard, whichever the halachas applied. Then says the Gemara, Lo yikvar yotzu me'ador, how can you say that on Chol HaMoed, that's what it says in that same Mishnah in Moed Kotna. On Chol HaMoed, one's allowed to go out and remove the Kilaim. How can you say they would go and remove the Kilaim on Chol HaMoed? Did it not say in our Mishnah that on the 15th of Adar, they would inspect the fields for Kilaim? So they've already done it on the 15th of Adar. Why do they need to do it again a couple of weeks later on Chol HaMoed? Answers the Gemara, Tiftar, Shahoisa Hashano Afela. We're talking about that it was a late year and the growth, the Kilaim, started growing only much later, and therefore on the 15th of Adar it could not yet be determined that there was Kilaim growing there, and therefore it was only later by Chol HaMoed that they could actually see the Kilaim, and therefore in such a year one was allowed to go around on Chol HaMoed and remove the Kilaim. Ve'inatzmochim nikorim, because it was a late year, then these plants were not yet recognizable when on the 15th of Adar. Continues the Gemara, Minayin Letzion. Where do we have a remez in the Torah hinting to us that there is such a concept that one marks the graves, that people should know where a grave is in order not to be ma'ahil, not to hover over, to roof over a grave? Rav Brachia said as follows, that Rabbi Yaakov bar Bas Yaakov, that Rabbi Yaakov, the son of Bas Yaakov, and there's a reason that elsewhere we saw already in the Gemara in Erevin that Rashi explains why we don't speak about Rabbi Yaakov's father, we speak about his mother, who was the daughter of Yaakov. B'shem Reb Chunya, and the name of Reb Chunya de Bras Chivrin, who lived in Bras Chivrin. Rabbi Yosi Amar Lo, Rabbi Yosi said, not like Rav Barachia, Rabbi Yosi said it was actually somebody else who gave the answer. And who was that? It was Rabbi Yaakov bar Acha b'shem Reb Chunya de Bras Chivrin. And Reb Chizkiah argued with them and said it was somebody else. It was Reb Zriel Bereid Reb Chunya de Beis Chivron, from Beis Chivron, B'Shem Reb Chunya de Beis Chivron. And what answer did one of these three Chachomim give? As follows, that the Pasuk says, V'Tomei, Tomei Yikro, a Tomei person should shout out, I'm Tomei, don't come near me, and keep people who are not allowed to be Tomei away from him. So we see here, in order that the tumah should crawl out to you with its mouth, and tells you, proish, separate yourself from me. And even though over there it's talking about metzora, it's talking about somebody, a live human being who has to declare, I'm tomei, stay away from me. But it's alluded here also is that any tomei should declare itself as tomei. So if you have a grave, the grave is Tomei, make sure that there's a way that the grave is telling people that it's Tomei. How does a grave do that? If you put a marking on it and everybody knows, stay away from the grave. Continues the Gemara, Rabbi Ilo B'Shem, Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, brings the following Pasuk. The Pasuk, and this is another Pasuk that we learn from here, the halachas of Tziyun HaKvarim, marking the graves. It says in the Pasuk, and this is the Pasuk by Yecheskel, which is actually talking about the Milchemes Gog u'Magog, where there's obviously going to, or it seems that there's going to be a lot of corpses lying around. So the Pasuk says, V'ovru ha'ovrim ba'oretz, that the passerbys who are going to be passing by in the land, V'ro'o etzem odom, and they will see a bone of man, U'bono etzlein, who will build next to it, Tzion, a marker, Ad kovr oise am kavrin el gei hamoin goig, until people come and will be able to do a proper burial in the right place. So the Gemara is now going to darsh on each word in this pasuk. It says v'avro oivrim baretz v'ra'o etzem odom. What does it mean etzem? Mikan shemetzainin ala tzomis. So it already says here clearly, you see a bone, even though the flesh has already been decomposed, it's just a bone left, you still have to mark it, because even hovering over a bone could make a person Tomei. Odom, when it says etem odom, why does the pasuk have to say of man? Mikan shemetzainin ala shidra vagulgeles. Those bones which are which are very clearly defined as being human, for example, the shidra or the spine or the gulgulus as being the skull, that even if you have just those two or either one of those bones, that you have to mark them. And this is to do with halachas of roiv minyan and roiv binyan. There's other halachas of tumah that sometimes you need to have most of the structure of the being, sometimes you need to have most of the bones, but either way, the gulgulus and the shedra make something tummy, and therefore they have to be marked. Ubono, and the pasuk says they would build. What do we see from the word building? It doesn't say make a tzion, it says build a tzion. Mikan shemetzainin al gabe even kavua. When they would take this sid, this white colored material, whatever it is, some cement, and put it onto the, and mark the grave, mark it on, make sure you put this tzion, you put this marker on something which is solid, something fixed. Vim oimer at al gabe even tlusha, because if you're going to say that you can even mark the grave by putting a mark on stones that are movable, then afi hailecha, somebody might move these stones to another place, and suddenly you'll see these stones with the markings on them somewhere else, and people will say there's a grave here. And if somebody hovered over those stones or near those stones, we'll soon see, hovered over them, they're going to say that, oh, we're tummy. And if they were carrying truma, they'll say, oh, the truma is tummy, and they're going to have to burn the truma, they can't eat it. And in truth, this is not tummy, because the stones didn't originate from here, and you'll be burning the truma for nothing. And therefore, make sure that when you make this, the markers, do it on something solid. Etzlo, why does it say in the pasuk that they would build this marker next to the etzem odom? Is lemokim tara, because you should mark it next to. Don't put the marking on top of where the bone is, on top of where the buried the corpse is, because that way, by the time you get there and you hover over the marking and notice the marking, it's too late. You're already tummy. So what do? Put the marking beyond the tumma, and that way, if a person hovers over the marking, he's not yet tummy, because the marking is on the outside of the tumma, and by that time he'll realize and he won't hover beyond the marking. So that's what the pasuk tells us. Make sure the markings are over a mokim tohir. Tzion, mikan tzion. That's the final word there. The ubono etzli tzion. You should make a marker. And this is the pasuk where we see that some of the halachas of marking a grave. Continues the Gemara. Umotzo even achas metzuyenes. If you find a single stone, which is a marking, which is not really appropriate, because we just said now that you should mark etzloi around the corpse or around the grave. And you can never have a single stone going around something. It would need to be a row of stones circling the tumah. But if in the event that you find a single stone with this marking on, afal pi she'ein mekaymin kein, even though that's not the way to make a marking, nonetheless, hamayel olea, if you hover over this stone, Tommy, we assume him to be Tommy. We assume that the person who made the marking, he put the marking exactly on top of the tumah, not around the tumah, and that's why there's only one stone. And if you put the stone on top of the tumah, then somebody who hovers over this stone is Tommy. Ani oimir, that meis mutsuyan v'hoya nosun tachter, because we say that we assume that there was a meis, a dead person underneath this stone, and the stone is on top of the mace, and therefore hovering over the stone is Tommy. Continues the Braisa, Hoyushtaim, if there were two stones that were not right next to each other with a gap in between, and it wasn't like a very clearly defined circle around an area which was obviously a tumme in the middle. It was just two stones, then Hamail Alehem Tohir. Then if somebody hovers over the stones, they're Tohir. Ubeinehem Tommy. We assume that the two stones mark two ends of a tumah, of a bone, or of a corpse, or a grave, and therefore hovering over the stones are toir, as we said before. The stones should have been positioned in a mokim tara, but between the two stones, that's where the tumah is, and it's a person hovers over the area, and between the two stones is tummy. Im hoya chayrish bintayim. If, however, the area between the two stones has been ploughed, and you're not allowed to plough a graveyard, and if it was ploughed, it's obviously taken for granted that the area between the two stones is not got any tumma in it. There was no corpse buried there. If there's no corpse buried there, then the two stones are obviously indicating two single stones. What did we say before was the halacha, if you find a single stone, that the tumma is under the stone? Harehin ki yechidus. If the if the area between the two stones is ploughed, then each stone is considered as a single stone. Bineyem toyer, the area between the two stones is toyer, or siveisem, and just underneath the stones, tomei are tomei. Continues the Gemara, Tani. We learnt in a braisa, ein mitzainin ala basar. If you see that there's some flesh of a dead person that's lying on the floor that needs to be marked, then we do not mark the flesh, even though if the flesh is big enough, then somebody who hovers over it will be tummy. However, we're afraid that a few days or weeks from now, the flesh will be entirely decomposed, the stone marking it will still be there, and anybody who hovers over these stones or beyond these stones will say that they're tummy. And the truth is, they're not tummy because the meat's not there anymore, the flesh has been decomposed. And then for all the generations afterwards who are passing this marking, they'll say that anyone who hovers over it is tummy, and the truma will, they'll have to burn the truma in the event that the truma became tummy. So the Braisa says, "Ein matayninas ala boso." If you see just flesh with no bones, that means within a short time there'll be no remains there, do not mark it. Shemon is akil abasar, because it could, at some point the flesh is going to be decomposed, and that from that point on, even if somebody is mile on it, he will not be tomei. Reb Yusta bar Shunam, boya kume Reb Mono. Reb Yusta, he asked Reb Mono, but if you don't mark it, then retroactively it's going to be apparent that there was somebody who went over this flesh before it was decomposed, he became tummy, and the truma had to be burnt, and he didn't. And what's going to happen is that you're going to be metame tahiris lemafrea. People are going to walk there, and things that are tahir are going to become tummy because you didn't mark it. So, omale. So Rav Mono answered back to Rav Yusta, and this is a very big yesoid, mutav shiskalkulu boy l'shah, with rather a short time issue, a kilkul, a short time problem, and indeed that we will have made some truma become tomei by, because we didn't mark this, rather a short term problem, v'al yiskalkulu boy l'olam, in order to avoid a long term issue of all those Tahiris that you're going to say are tomei because they went over this marker, when indeed the marker is toir because there's nothing, the flesh has been decomposed. Continues the Gemara, we're going to learn the next Mishnah. In Yerushalmi, the Mishnayis are not called Mishnah Aleph, Mishnah Beis, and Mishnah Gimel. They're called Halacha Aleph, Halacha Beis, Halacha Gimel. This is the second Mishnah. In the first Perek, it's called Halacha Beis. Says the Mishnah, Omer Rabbi Huda. And we've already discussed in the first Mishnah that on the first of Adar, they would announce everybody should get rid of their kilayim growing in their fields. On the 15th, the agents would go around, v'yetzin af al hakilayim, and they would go around to make sure that there's no kilayim left in the fields. So on that theme, the Mishnah is continuing. Omer Rabbi Yehuda, b'rishoyno at first, hayu oikrin, the agents of Beis Din, if they found there was kilayim in a field, they would uproot it, u'mashlichin nifneim, and throw the kilayim down in front of them, and that would embarrass them, and that would be enough of a deterrent, and make sure that they would take away the kilayim on the 15th, or on after the 1st of Adar. Misharabu Ivre Avera, and we'll soon see in the Gemara exactly what happened here, but when people, not only did it not bother them, this slight embarrassment, but they were even happy for the agents to come and do the work for them of weeding the fields, then Hoyu Mashlichim Ledrochim, then they would take the kilayim and not throw it down just in the fields, they would actually throw it out on the roads outside the fields to make it even more public. And Hiskinu Sheyu Mafkirin as Kol Asoda, at some point even that didn't work, and the Beis Din said, they instituted that any field where on the 15th of Adar Kilayim was found in it, they would declare the field as ownerless, and anybody else who came, could come and take the field and get rid of the Kilayim, and the owner would lose his field. Says the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Yehuda Chule, Tony, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, at first, the agents would uproot the kilayim and throw the kilayim in the fields in front of the owners. They had a double happiness. They were happy for two things that happened. whilst the agents were removing the kilayim, they were in effect weeding the field. Ve'echot shayunenin min ha'kilayim, and also that this kilayim that's been uprooted, it's not also bahana. They would now have uprooted kilayim that they could benefit from. Misherobu oive avreira hayu mashlichin al adrochim. So at some point they would then take the kilayim, then the agents, instead of putting the kilayim in front of them for them to use, they would throw the kilayim out into the streets, and that way the owners would not be able to use the kilayim. Afal pi kein hayu smeichim. Nonetheless, there was reason for them to be happy. Shayu menachshin tzodesem. At least the fields were being weeded by the agents of the Beis Din. Hiskinu, and therefore they instituted shehayu mafkirin kol asod kula. That the Mefarshim explained that the agents would not actually uproot the kilayim. They would leave the kilayim there, and they would declare the field ownerless. Anybody who wanted could come and get rid of the kilayim and acquire the field. And this, and that was hopefully going to deter the owners from this situation. Continues the Gemara. Minayin shehefker Beis Din hefker. What's the source in a pasuk that Beis Din have the ability, have the power to actually declare something that does not belong to them as ownerless, known as hefker Beis Din hefker? If Beis Din declare something ownerless, then that works. Tichsiv, this is learned from a pasuk. The pasuk says that Ezra, when he wanted to institute some halachas, there was an issue with intermarriage at the time, and he wanted to make sure that everybody was going to listen to all the rules. So he said that b'chol asher lo yovel l'shloishes hayomim ke'atzas hasorim vazkenim, anybody who would not arrive according to the advice of the elders within 3 days, yochram kol rechushoy, all his property would be confiscated, v'hu yibodel mikahal ha'goyla, and he would be separated from all those who were in the Golus and were now going to hopefully come up to Eretz Yisrael. So you see from here that Ezra had the ability to be yochram kol rechushoy, to confiscate property. So you see that hefker Beis Din hefker. Now the Gemara is taking this one step further, and it's minayin sheep turo min ha'maisrus. We know that something that is really hefka, if the owners of a field of food declare the field as hefka, as ownerless, then anything growing in it is potter from maiser. One does not need to take the maisrus given to the kohenim, to the levim, the different halachas of hefka. The question is over here, if this fellow, he left his kilayim there, and now the Beis Din, the agents came and saw that the kilayim was there, so they declared his field ownerless. Now, as we saw from the pasuk, that they definitely have the ability to do that, and this will allow anybody else to come and to claim the field and say, okay, it's ownerless, I'm claiming the field, I'll get rid of the kilayim, and I'll have a field. So that we know they can do, that we've already seen. The question is, did Beis Din intend to make it completely hefka to the extent that even there's no maisrus, which means that anything that grew in that time period is potter from maisrus? Or no? And if it is potter, then the kohenim, the levim, they lose out from this. Or no, maybe Beis Din did not mean to cause loss to the levim. Maisrus will have to be taken. Just the owner loses his field and somebody else can take over the field. That's the question. Minayin shiptura min ha'maisrus. When Beis Din did a hefker Beis Din hefker, did they intend to make an absolute hefker, or did they intend only to make hefker regarding that the ownership can be moved to somebody else, but not regarding to exempt the vegetables, the fruits from maisrus? Says the Gemara, Rabbi Yonasan bereid Rabbi Yitzchok bar Acha, shoma lo min hado. That Rabbi Yonasan, he learned from the following a proof to this. What does it say? It says in the Gemara, Ein ma'abrin es hashono loy b'shvius v'loy b'moitzah shvius. We know that, and we'll soon see why, but sometimes there was a necessity for a month, for the month of the moon, the lunar month, to have an extra month. That means the lunar year would need an extra month, because we know that the lunar year is approximately 10 days shorter than the solar year. And because the Nisan, the beginning of the lunar year, has to coincide with spring, with Chodesh HaOviv, we'll soon see this inside, which is in the solar year, then there's every year Nisan falls 10 days behind. So every few years they have to add another Adar, pushing Nisan forward. So so it says here in the Braisa, Ein ma'abrin es hashono, those years that are chosen to extend. Ibur means like a pregnancy. It's like a woman who has, who there's an extension to her when she's holding, carrying a baby. So to a year is given an extension, an ibur. So ein ma'abrin es hashana lo b'shvius v'lo b'maitzah shvius. Then the seventh year, the Shemitah year, and the year after Shemitah, the eighth year, which is really the first year, they would not do ibur hashana, because they could maneuver it. They could do the ibur a year earlier, a year later. It didn't have to be in one particular year. It just had to be before Nisan fell too far behind. V'lo b'shvius v'lo b'maitzah shvius. Ve'im ibra, if not, however, they did do ibur in shvius or maitzah shvius, harezu mu'uberes, then it is mu'uberes, even though they shouldn't have done it, but if they did it, then it's valid. That's the braisa. Says the Gemara, v'chodesh echot shu moisif, loy potur mimaisu yasu. It's clear that we know that in Shemitah, that anything, all Shemitah fruits are potur from maisus. If they add on in Shemitah an extra year, an extra month, now Shemitah is 13 months instead of 12 months, then how could Beis Din do that? Shemitah is Hefka. The answer is Hefka Beis Din Hefka. That's what the Gemara assumes at this point. It's Hefka Beis Din Hefka. And it's clear that since it's an extension of the Shemitah year, it's part of the Shemitah year, of course it's exempt from Maestros. So you see that so he brought, Rabbi Yonason brought proof from here that Hefka Beis Din Hefka exempts the fruits even from Maestros. Now, before coming back to that, the Gemara continues. Ad kedoin, in the meantime, we understand Shvius. We understand why they would not extend the Shemitah year by an extra month, because it's an extra month you cannot work on the fields, and then they will not find any produce to bring the korban oimer and the shtei alechem, which are korbonis minchis, which they had to be brought. And if you didn't have produce growing in the fields, they would not be able to, the new produce they would bring, they wouldn't the longer that you cannot work in the fields, the longer you're not going to have the new produce. If in the Shemitah year, if you, the Shemitah year is year number 7, you couldn't plant at all, you couldn't do anything in the fields. Now in the 8th year, by the time Pesach came for the korban oimer or shavuos for the shtei alechem, they would already be hoping to have new produce. But if you extend the Shemitah year an extra month, and then there's going to be even less produce available for the oimer and the shtei alechem. So we understand that the Shemitah year they did not want to extend. Moitzah shvius mai, why did they not want to extend the 8th year, the year after Shemitah, why did they not want to extend that? Says the Gemara, Omer Bavo, Rebun, Sheloi Lirbois B'Isur Chodosh. Because we know that any produce that grows after the 16th of Nisan is called Chodosh, and you're not allowed to eat it until you bring the Korban Oimer the following year. That means every year on the 16th of Nisan they would bring the Korban Oimer, and that would allow them to eat all the new produce that had grown that till then. And if you're going to extend the 8th year, then you're going to have more. It's going to then the korban oimer is going to be brought a month later, and that means an extra month where the produce is not going to be able to be eaten. That means the gap between the previous korban oimer and that the korban oimer of the 8th year is going to be 13 months, not 12 months. They did not want to extend the amount of time that there's an issa of chodosh. Now, on a regular year, we didn't have a problem because there's lots of produce that's growing, and there's always ample yoshon, which is produce left from the previous year, to feed everybody until the 16th of Nisan the following year. But here, the 8th year is just after the Shemitah year, and in the Shemitah year, the produce is very scarce, there's much less because you cannot plant. Therefore, all the yoshon will have been consumed in the Shemitah year, and now in all these months, from the end of the Shemitah year until the 16th of Nisan, there's no more Yoshon, it's all Chodosh, and they cannot eat it. So you're going to extend that an extra month? They didn't want to do that. Continues the Gemara. Reb Zeira b'shem Reb Elazar, Reb Avo, says, Hadar da'ad Omar, this that you said, that we do not extend, we're not ma'abar, the Shemitah year and the year after Shemitah, is only Achaloi Hite Rebbe Lahavi Yerek Michutz Laretz. At first, since there was a gzeira that the offer of the earth of Chutz Laretz has some level of tumah to it, they did not want to import fruits and produce from fruits, vegetables, and produce from Chutz Laaretz, because it might come with a bit of the earth, which would then cause an issue in Eretz Yisrael. So all the while that they could not import, then indeed there was a lack of fruits, vegetables, produce in the Shemitah year and in the year after Shemitah, and therefore they did not want to extend the year in order to make it even more complicated. Aval mishehite Rebbe lahavi yerek michutz laoretz. Once Rebbe allowed, from the point that Rebbe allowed fruits, vegetables, and produce to be imported from Chutz Laaretz into Eretz Yisrael, then there's no more lack of produce. There was plenty there for people to eat, and therefore he shvius he shall shashne shavua. There's no difference anymore between Shemitah and all the other years. The people would be eating the imported fruits, and the oymen, the shtei alechem that are needed to be cut from Eretz Yisrael's produce, they would find svichin. They would find that little bit of produce that grew on its own over Shemitah, and they will be able to use that. But if they could not import anything from Chutz Laaretz, then anything that would have grown during Shemitah would clearly have been consumed during Shemitah, and therefore there was an issue. Continues the Gemara. V'toni ein ma'abrin v'chulu. We learned that they would not extend the Shemitah year or the year after it. Omer ibmono. Hador dat Omer. This that you said, that we do not extend the Shemitah year or the year after it, then barishoino shahoyu hashonim kitikonon. That was only true originally, at first, and the Mefarshim may explain, and it could be this is from the time of the Beis Hamikdash, it was like this, but it says that when things were going the way they should, then the produce would become ripe very quickly, and in Nisan, the produce would already be ripe, and therefore they did not want to delay the Nisan, and they didn't want to delay by adding a second Adar. Aval achshav she'ein hashonim kitikunon. But now, in any case, that the produce does not become ripe until much later, and in Nisan, in any case, it's not ripe, then he shviyas, he shar shnei shavua, then it makes no difference whether you extend Adar or not, as far as the Chodosh produce is concerned. In any case, the produce is only going to become ripe after the Korban Oimeh is offered, and therefore you have nothing to gain by making sure that the Korban Oimeh is offered a month earlier. Continues the Gemara, Toni shall base Rabban Gamliel. From the Beis Medrash of Rabban Gamliel, they ruled that immediately after Shemitah, the year after Shemitah, the eighth year, they were allowed to be ma'abar, they would add an ador to the year and extend the year. Clearly, from the Beis Rabban Gamliel, they held, like we saw before, that one was allowed to import the fruits and vegetables and produce from Chutz Laaretz into Eretz Yisrael, and therefore there was no issue with extending the year. Continues the Gemara, and now we're going back to what Rabbi Yonasan said. Rabbi Yonasan said that the source that the Hefka Beis Din Hefka, even Potter from Maestros, was from the fact that the Beis Din had the ability to extend the Shemitah year. They shouldn't have done it at some point in time, they shouldn't have done it l'katchila, but if they did, it was valid. And clearly in Shemitah, there was a ptur from Maisa. So you see that Hefka Beis Din Hefka is valid even to exempt from Maisa. And the Gemara is going to argue with that now. Omer Reb Avun, im min ado, if your proof that Beis Din, Hefka Beis Din Hefka, exempts from Maisa, is from Shemitah, less at Shoma Minoklum. You don't have any proof from there at all. Why? Because as we explained before, it's not just a regular Hefka Beis Din Hefka, that it's true that Beis Din do it, but it's not just Beis Din instituting that we are now saying, we're creating a hefka, and then you discuss what did we intend. No, when Beis Din added a month, they were actually complying with a biblical requirement to make sure that Nisan is always in the spring. And therefore, since it was the Beis Din that were doing it, but they were complying to the Chiyuv Min HaTorah to make sure that the lunar year gets an extra month every so often, then when Beis Din decide to do that, it's not a Hefka Beis Din Hefker Din. It's a Din in Ibur HaShono. And Ibur HaShono is a Din Min HaTorah. Nothing to do with Hefka Beis Din Hefka. Let's see that inside. The Pasuk says, Shomer Eschoydesh HaOviv. The springtime, referring to the time where the fruits, where the produce ripens, which is in the spring. When this is the Oviv of the solar cycle. Vosiso Pesach Lashem Elikecho, B'chodesh Ovi Voitziacho, etc. So the Gemara says, Shomreu, guard this the month that Pesach is going to be in, Sheivoyu Bechidushoy, that it should be at the beginning of the spring, when the new produce gets ripened, which means make sure that Nisan is always not too far away, Rosh Chodesh Nisan is not too far away from the beginning of the spring. The solar year and the lunar year should start approximately the same time, even though the lunar year is 10 days shorter. Make sure to add a month every so often. Says the Gemara. So Meheichon Omar Da. Okay, so once you've rejected Rabbi Yonason's proof, and from Shemitah it's not a Hefka based in Hefka, it's just based in doing what the Torah told them to do to extend the year. It's true, maybe they shouldn't have done it in Shemitah, because they could have done it a year before, a year after. But when they actually do it, they're doing the mitzvah min haTorah of Ibur HaShana. So it's nothing to do with Hefka based in Hefka. So what is, do you have any proof that when Beis Din do Hefka based in Hefka, it exempts from Maisa? We're back to the original question. V'haidah, from where, Omar Da, do you know that Beis Din, when they do Hefka based in Hefka, it's even to exempt from Maisa? Says the Gemara, it's from the following, that we learned in another Gemara. It's a Mishnah in Peah. Godish, if somebody took a stack of grains, Shaloi Lukat Tachtov. We know that there's a concept called Leket, which is certain stalks which poor people are allowed to collect from the fields. And we'll learn about the halachas of Leket, Shikcha, and Peah in Maseches Peah, and Mirtz Hashem, when we learn the Mishnah is Peah. But if there was some stalks there that in truth were Hefka, they belonged to the poor people. And this owner, instead of allowing the poor people to come, he just piled a stack of stalks on top of it. Then the Mishnah says, Godish, a stack of stalks, kol sheloi lukat tachtov, which the poor people had not collected their stalks from under it, kol hanoi goiz boret, all the stalks which are actually touching the ground, the lowest level of stalks touching the ground, harehin shel aniyim, that they belong to the aniyim. The Chachomim, they used Hefka based in Hefka. They said, even though this whole pile of stalks actually belonged to the owner, since you shouldn't have piled it there, you piled it there, the whole part of the stalks, or all those stalks touching the ground, belong to the Aniyim. And it doesn't say here the Aniyim have to take Maisa, because really, why shouldn't you have to take Maisa from it? It belongs to the owners. And if you give it to somebody else, you have to take Maisa. No. Based in Sehefka, based in Hefka, it's for the Aniyim, and they didn't say you have to take Maisa. So you see from here that Hefka based in Hefka exempts from Maisa. V'omer Reb Ami b'shem Reb Shimon ben Lakish. Reb Ami said in the name of Reb Shimon ben Lakish that halacha is the Beishamai. It's only according to Beishamai. Because what did the Chachamim do? They said that whole lower level, or lower layer of stalks belongs to the Aniyim. They didn't make it Hefka for everybody. It's not like we saw before. Hefka means like in our Mishnah, where if this field has kelaim in it, then the Beis Din said the field is Hefka for anybody. If it's Hefka for anyone, of course it's Hefka. Over here, it was only made Hefka for the Aniyim, for the poor people to take. That's a limited type of Hefka, and there's a machlokes b'Shammai and b'Hillel where the Hefka works when it's not for everybody. So Shlach Lakish said that this Mishnah is b'Shammai. It's only according to b'Shammai that Hefka l'Aniyim is called Hefka. D'ika b'Hillel, because according to b'Hillel, Aniyim oichlin u'mi'asrin. Since it's not a proper Hefka, or since you only made a Hefka for the Aniyim, it's not considered a proper Hefka. The Aniyim can take it. But since it's not a proper Hefka, the Aniyim have to take Maisa. Omele Rabbi Yosi argued with the Shlach Lakish and said, Shomanu shehu potur mimaisa divrei akol mishum knosa. Rabbi Yosi argues, and it's very not clear here in the Mefarshim how this worked. But what Rabbi Yosi was saying was that since they made this knas, this penalty against the owners for putting his pile of stalks onto this area that the poor people had not yet collected from, then somehow it's considered Hefka for everybody. Either some Mefarshim explained that only a regular Hefka has to be for everybody, but Hefka based in Hefka doesn't have to be for everybody. Or they say that Beis Din made it Hefka for everybody, and then in a separate type of transaction and decree, they said only the poor people should come and fetch it. However we explain this, either where Rabbi Yosi is saying that this is a proper Hefka, and it's even and therefore it's potter from Meiser, even according to Beis Hillel. Continues the next Mishnah. Halacha Gimel, Bechamisha Osor Boy, on the 15th of Adar, Shulchanos Hoyu Yoishvin B'Medina. Then all over Eretz Yisrael, in Yerushalayim, in Eretz Yisrael, just not in the Beis HaMikdash. There would be money changers that would be available to help people to change the different currencies and coins that they had in order to have a Machtis HaShekel to give for the Korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. B'chof Hei, on the 25th of Adar, and time was getting closer to the deadline, which is before Rosh Chodesh Nisan, and they wanted to encourage people to hurry up and bring their shkolim, and therefore Yoshvu b'Migdosh, the money changers, would actually sit in the Beis HaMikdosh. Mishem Yoshvu b'Migdosh, and from the point when the money changers started being sitting in the Beis HaMikdosh, then Hizchiru l'Mashkein, then those people who had not yet given their shkolim, their Machtis HaShekel, for the Korbanos, pledges would be taken from them, a mashkin would be taken, just to make sure and to insist that everybody brings their shkolim. Says the Mishnah, es mima mashkinim, from who would they take pledges? So the Mishnah says, levim v'yisraelim, that means not kohenim, but yes, levim and yisraelim, and geirim, converts, avodim u'shuchrorim, those evit knanis, the non-Jewish slaves that actually had been set free and now they are nizgayer, they convert and have all the halachas of Yisrael. Avaloi noshim v'avodim uktanim, but not women, not slaves who are not yet meshuchrar, and not ktanim, and not minors, and we'll see in the Gemara exactly who these ktanim are. V'chol kotin shehizchil oviv lishkoil al yodoi, any minor who his father had started giving the shkolim on behalf of his son, shuv eino poisuk, he does not stop from that custom until the child is 20 years old, from which point he's got his own requirement to bring the shkolim. This continues the Mishnah, ein memashkinin es akeanim b'pnei darkei shalim, and that's the loshen used in the Mishnah, is that the reason they would not take pledges from Kohenim is because of Darkei Shalom. We're going to see in the Gemara that others had a different version here, because Darkei Shalom is no different from Kohenim to any Yisrael. And even with Goyim, we sometimes find there's a concept of Darkei Shalom. So if it was just Darkei Shalom, we wouldn't take a pledge from anyone. There's something unique about the Kohenim, which is more to do with honor, with kavod, than with Shalom, and we'll see in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah, Omer Biuda, Heid ben Buchri be Yavne. Ben Buchri, he testified in Yavne, that kol kohen sheshoikel einoi choyte. Even though a kohen does not have to give the shkolim, that means not like the Tanakhama. The Tanakhama says that they do have a mitzvah to give the shkolim, and they have a chiyuv to give the shkolim. Just ein memashkin, and we don't take a pledge from them, mipnei darkei sholim. Rabbi Yehuda says that Ben Buchri claimed that a kohen is exempt from bringing the shkolim, and of course, you wouldn't take a mashkin, he's got no chiyuv. However, if a kohen chooses to give the shkolim, ein echoita, he's not considered a sinner, he's allowed to contribute, and we'll see in the Gemara what the issue is here. Omar le'Rabbi Yechonon ben Zakkai, Rabbi Yechonon ben Zakkai argued with Rabbi Yehuda and argued with Ben Buchri, and says, loiki, that's not true. Ela kol kohen she'ein echoikel choita. A kohen must give the shkolim, and if he doesn't, he's considered a sinner. Just Elo, and rather we just don't take a pledge from the Kohen. But of course he's got a chiyuv like everybody else. Elo she'akohenim doshin, the reason that the Kohenim, they themselves didn't bring the shkolim, is because they mistakenly made a drosha in a pasuk. Doshin mikrozel atzmon, the following pasuk, they understood from this pasuk and they made a mistake and they darshened it themselves regarding their own requirement or their own exemption from bringing the shkolim. What does it say in the pasuk? The pasuk says, "V'chol minchas koyein kolil tia loisei ochil." There's all other minochis. Whenever korb mincha is brought, part of it is put on the mezbeach, the koymetz, the levaino, the shemen. But the rest of the mincha is actually eaten by the people. However, mincha that's brought by a koyein has to go entirely onto the mezbeach. And so these kohenim understood the hoyel va'omer u'shtei alechem v'lechem aponim. There are three minchos which the tzibur bring. One is the korban omer on the second day of Pesach, the 16th of Nisan. One is the shtei alechem. The omer. One is the shtei alechem, which is on Shavuos. They would bring the two breads and lechem aponim, which is the 12 breads every week. That shelonuhem, that if we, they brought from the tzibur, if we kohenim were to contribute and be part of this mincha, then it would be considered also, as well, it would be considered as a mincha belonging to a kohen. If it's a mincha that belongs to a kohen, then it has to be completely burnt on the mizbeach. Heich necholin. How can the omer and the shtei lechem, the lechem upon him, be eaten? So it must be, the kohenim understood it was a mistake. But the kohenim understood that since omer, shtei lechem, and lechem upon him are eaten, it must be they have no share in it, even though they're a korban tzibur. That must be, says the kohenim, that a kohen is exempt from bringing the shkolim, and that way he has no part in the korbanos tzibur. And obviously it was a mistake, because the drasha is a mistake, and at least according to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, they are chayev, and if he doesn't bring it, he's considered a choyte. And the reason that there's no issue with oimer shtei alechem and lechem upon him is because they're considered mincha of a tzibur. It's only a mincha of a yachid, a kohen, an individual. He has those alochas that the entire mincha goes on the mizbeach. But those alochas do not affect the korbanis tzibur and the menochis of a tzibur. Says the Gemara, Ein memashkenin es haktanim. From the fact that the Mishnah says that you don't take a pledge from a minor, from a cotton, it would seem, ha-litvoya, toivin, that one has got permission to demand from the minors to bring the shkolim. We just say to them, you have to bring the shkolim, but we're not going to take a mashken, we're not going to pledge it. The question is, what sort of cotton can you demand from him? You can't demand anything from a minor. Hadod itmar, says the Gemara, we're talking about B'shehevish de Cyrus. We're talking about that he's already a godel as far as all other mitzvahs in the Torah is concerned. He's already brought the two hairs which are assigned the Minat Torah, that he's already a godel. Avalim lo yehevi beis Cyrus, but if he does not have shtei Cyrus and he's considered a minor regarding all the mitzvahs in the Torah, lo yibado, then in that case we do not even tevea from him the shkolim. Ulemashkin in memashkin in achi yovish dei Cyrus. Or the Gira says afar pishavish dei Cyrus, that even if he has two Cyrus and he's a godel regarding all other mitzvahs in the Torah, we do not take from him a mashkin, even if he has two Cyrus, until he's age 20, because the shkolim were primarily required by those who are older than 20. Continues the Braisa. Kini masnisin, the way to understand the Mishnah that Ein Mamashkanin es HaKoyanim, that you do not take a pledge from Koyanim, is not like it says in the Mishnah Bipnei Darkei Sholim, because Darkei Sholim, as we said before, applies across the board, not just to Koyanim, but rather Mipnei Derech HaKovoid, because there's a particular honor that we give to the Koyanim more than to anybody else, and the Mefarshim explain, either because of the mitzvah of Kidashtoi, or because Avodas HaKorbonis Aleim, since they take care of all the work in the Beis HaMikdash, the Korbonis, therefore we have special honor, and we say, you know what, you're chayev, but we're not going to take a pledge from you. We trust you, you bring your shkolim when you're supposed to. Continues the Gemara, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Heid Chulu. This is Rabbi Yehuda quoting Ben Bukhri. That Ben Bukhri said that a kohen is completely exempt from bringing the shkolim, but if he brings the shkolim, he's not called a choyte. Omer of Barachia. Time under Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who argued and said that a kohen is chayev. We saw Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai in the Mishnah, loiki elokol kohen she'ein shekel choita. A kohen who does not bring a shekel, a machtes hashekel, is considered a choita. So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he holds that, well, the source that kohenim are chayev is from the pasuk that says by the shkolim, ze yitnu kol over al apkudim machtes hashekel b'shekel hakodesh, etc. What's called ze yitnu? Ze, this you should give. Ze has the numerical value of 12. Yud beis shvotim yitnu, all 12 tribes, including the kohenim, have to bring the shkolim. That was the source of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Continues the Gemara. Reb Tovi b'shem Rav Hamnuna. Rav Tovi, in the name of Rav Hamnuna, explained that the Chachomim, who held like Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, that the Chachomim are that the Kohanim are chayev to bring the Shkolim, are actually asking a question against Rabbi Yehuda, who quotes Ben Bukhri, who says that Kohanim are not chayev. And at this point, we assume that if the Kohen is not chayev, then even if he's giving it, Rabbi Yehuda says, Eino Choyte, he's not called a Choyte, he doesn't sin. But he's allowed to give it. But since he's giving it, and not necessarily giving it wholeheartedly, he's not mechuyev to bring the shkolim, for whatever reason he's sharing it, he's giving his shekel. But the money that these kohanim are giving seems still to be considered as money belonging to an individual, belonging to this kohen who's come and said, I don't have a chiyuv to bring the shekel, I'm bringing it anyway. And here we have a big issue, that kain meshivin chachomim Rabbi Yehuda, the chachomim questioned Rabbi Yehuda and said, we have a number of issues with money, with coins in this chamber, which so to speak are going to be used to buy the korbonis of a tzibur and have all the alochas of a tzibur, when in truth some of these coins actually belong to the kohanim, and the korbonis being brought should be considered korbonis of individuals, not of the kohanim. What halochas, for example, should belong to the individuals, not of the tzibur? For example, Chatos Yochid Mesa. We know this halachas of Chamisho Chatois HaMeseis, Halacha L'Meishim Sinai. There are five different halachas that Korban Chatos, if something happens to them, they have to be let to die. For example, one of them is if an owner had a Korban Chatos, and for whatever reason, he then brought a different Korban Chatos for that same Avera, is called a Chatos Sheniskapru Ba'aleim, then the original Korban Chatos has to be let to die. In the case of a korban tzibur, that wouldn't be true. So if you have a chatos that's bought from this money, if you used coins belonging to the tzibur, then we wouldn't say that this chatos has to be let to die. But if you've used the coins belonging to those kohanim, it belongs to individuals, the chatos will be mesa. Or another halacha, for example, that we mentioned before, does a mincha get completely put on the mizbeach or not? If it belongs to the kohanim, it gets completely put on the mizbeach. If it belongs to the tzibur, the oimer, the shtei alechem, the lechem aponim, it does not get completely put onto the mizbeach. So they have a question, how can you, Reb Yehuda, say that they are exempt from bringing the coins, but if they bring the coins, they're not sinning? Of course they're sinning. They're going to cause a big issue. There's going to be a korban that's going to be viewed as a korban tzibur, when in truth it may belong to these individuals whose coins are being used, from the coins of these kohanim who are not part of the tzibur. Let's see that inside. Chatos yochid meisa. A chatos belonging to an individual has to be let to die. Ein chatos tzibur meisa, but the korban chatos does not of the tzibur does not have to be let to die. Minchas ayochid kreva kolil. A korban mincha belonging to the kohanim is completely put onto the mizbeach. Ve'ein minchas tzibur kreva kolil. Another Gemara interjects and says, I don't understand. You chachomim are asking a question against Rabbi Yehuda that chatos yochid is Mesa, Ve'en Chatos Tzibur Mesa? Well, you know Rabbi Yehuda doesn't even hold of that. How can you ask a question against him when he argues with that? V'kashya Meshivin Le'odom, Dovo Shein Emoidebo, you're asking a question against Rabbi Yehuda from a halacha that you know Rabbi Yehuda doesn't even hold of? That none we learnt in the Mishnah, She'en Chatos Tzibur Mesa. As we saw before, the Chatos of a Tzibur is not Mesa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Thomas, Rabbi Yehuda says that the same halacha applies, it is Mesa. But so either way, so there's an issue with the way the Chachomim asked that the first part of their question against Rabbi Yehuda. But the second part of the question of a mincha, of a yochid is kolil and tzibur is not kolil, that question stands. Says the Gemara, V'hu Maisivlon, you know how Rabbi Yehuda is going to answer the Chachomim? Zu loy nidvas yochidu. This is not considered a donation of an individual. When he's giving this shekel, or the half a shekel, to this chamber, he's giving it totally wholeheartedly. This is not my individual shekel, which is going to stay mine, and I'm not really so comfortable with just giving it to the public. No, I'm completely and generously giving it over to the tzibur, and therefore, now, even though I was not mechuyev, according to Rabbi Yehuda and according to Ben Bukhri, but I'm giving it over completely, and therefore these coins are considered korban tzibur and not considered those of a yochid. And therefore, I don't have any questions. However, Ve'inun, those Chachomim Masivinei will answer Rabbi Yehuda and say, just a minute, if it's true that the coins are given over so generously and so confidently that it's completely belonging to the Tzibur, and there's no part of this which is, so to speak, holding it back and saying this is still coins belonging to an individual, if so, Kivan Shenimsur al Tzibur, Kamishu Nidvas Tzibur, then it's a complete Nedava donation of the Tzibur. So why do you, Rabbi Yehuda, say in the Mishnah, Einoi Choyta, he's not a sinner if he gives the shekel? Tell him he can give it l'katchila. From the fact that it seems that it's something not completely right with it. If there's something not completely right with it, then it's not considered coins of a tzibur, it's considered coins of an individual. And then the question comes back. Continues the Gemara. Ksiv, it says in the Pasuk regarding the Machzitz HaShekel, Zeh yitnu kol ha'oivir al ha'pkudim, anyone who passes by the pkudim, the census, they have to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. The question is, who are these pkudim? What was this pkudim? What were they passing by? So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia, there was an argument between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia. Chad Omar called the over b'yama. Anybody who went through the Yamsuf, including Levi, including Kohanim, they all went through the Yamsuf. So according to the opinion that says kol ha'oiver al pkudim means kol ha'oiver, anybody who went through the Yamsuf, and the pkudim, the Mefarshim explained what the pkudim are, because we'll soon see there was a difference between the way that the Israelim were counted and the way the Kohanim and Levim were counted. The Israelim, they actually went past Moshe Rabbeinu and told him how many they were. But with the Kohanim Levim, it says Moshe went past the homes and the baskel came out and told Moshe exactly who was, how many people there were in each tent. But so they explained that kol ha'over, anyone who went through the Yamsuf, however he was counted, it doesn't matter whether they passed through Moshe or Moshe came past their homes, has to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. And this is obviously the opinion that says, like we saw before, that there's one opinion that holds Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who says that a Kohen have to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. The Chorono, Omar, the other opinion, either Rabbi Nechemia or Rabbi Yehuda holds, Kol de'ovar al pikudayo yitoin. Anybody who passed through the consensus, which means only the Israelim who actually passed through Moshe Rabbeinu to be counted, only they have to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. But those that didn't pass through, rather Moshe passed their tents, they were exempt. And that's the opinion that says that the Kohanim are not chayev to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. Man de Omar kol de Ovar b'yamo yitin, the opinion that says that anyone who went to the Yam Suf has to bring the Shkolim, is Messiah Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, is proof to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, says that Kohanim are chayev to bring. Man de Omar kol de Ovar al pikudayo yitin, anyone who went before Moshe Rabbeinu to be counted, Messiah le ben Bukhri, is proof to ben Bukhri that Kohanim are not chayev to bring the Machzitz HaShekel. And in Yirtzeh Hashem, in the next shir, we're going to continue from the next Mishnah.